By the way, hi to you, Nick, out there in Australia, listening to Coast. You listen to us religiously. Good to have you with us way down under. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue this incredible discussion with Tom Horn on Coast to Coast AM. Some of you calling right now, hold on. We'll take your phone calls next hour with our guest, Tom Horn. Okay, so just save yourself unless you want to just continue to call and wait till we grab the lines. But that's about an hour away. Tom, you strongly believe that this genetic altering of humans, even though scientists may start doing this now in a very regular way, is going to occur. Is this a good or bad thing?
Well, certainly there's going to be some things out of genetic modification that could be a good thing. I mean, I imagine there will be, for instance, in the future, and I look forward to this day when we find the cure to cancer. And it may well happen through gene modification in a way that would not offend people's religious ideas. For instance, if I went into the doctor with a tumor and they were able to extract a bit of that tumor and then modify its specific makeup and then use that modification to create a version of it that would attack itself, and then they inject that back into the tumor and they kill the tumor or whatever. I mean, there are certainly things that could happen and probably will in genetic modification and biotechnology that will be a good thing. There's all kinds of future possibilities where we'll probably learn to use biotech without necessarily giving in to transgenics or fundamental altering of living organisms. But I was on a show last week with one of the leading transhumanists in the world, and he interviewed me on his radio program because he wanted to talk to me about, you know, what were my concerns in terms of ethics and philosophy and things like that. And I told him, I said, you know, you have to realize that at least in the United States, that you can still see even within our government that ideas based on biblical philosophy continue to affect our legislation, philosophy, our courts, our Supreme Court, whatever, and you guys are going to have to come to the table and talk about the ethics of this whole idea that we're going to breach species barriers, that we're going to change living organisms. And by the way, George, I don't think this is only a problem for religious people. I would say that regardless of a person's worldview, religious, atheist, secular, humanist, whatever, everything that is happening in biotechnology today, which is advancing at a pace that is so much more rapid than most people have any idea, this is something that ought to be being attended to by most people. Now, that you know, it's not to say that there won't be benefits to humanity that come out of biotech, but because we're talking about, in most cases, the unnatural alteration of living organisms, this could have far-reaching, maybe adverse effects on our environment. And
well,
therefore,
things could get out of control in a big way.
And quickly. And maybe already are in a very small way with genetically modified crops. We're learning already from genetically modified crops that they do things we can't predict. And therefore, the very slow path into this field would be the wise path. Unfortunately, that's not the path we're taking yet. We're racing forward now with genetically modified crops, but also funding for transgenic animal-human embryos, because we believe that these creatures are going to somehow open the door to a better evolution of our species and other things. So now we've got moth genes that are being fused with potatoes. We got pigs that are being given human growth genes, fish that are being implanted with cattle growth genes, tomatoes that are being bred with flounders, human embryos that are being transgenically altered with rabbits. And what most people don't realize Like, for instance, in the case of food, what most people don't realize is like the FDA allows the producers of these products to do their own testing. And then they accept the reports of those corporations at face value that those biotech creations are safe. Well, in the end, I hope that they are. And frankly, I hope that we don't learn what I refer to as the Brundlefly lesson.
Exactly.
Do you remember the old, remember that old movie, The Fly?
One of my favorites. As a matter of fact, the one that was redone with Jeff Goldblum was great. As a matter of fact, it was in Los Angeles just 2 months ago. I'm having lunch at a little deli, and Goldblum's right next to me, and he was with a friend of his, and I wanted to go up there and just introduce myself, tried to get him on the show, and talk about that scene where he was the Brundlefly. I use that in jokes all the time now, Tom, and you're right. There is this danger that these kinds of alterations might produce these kinds of mutants that we can't stop. And as far as GM food, genetically modified food, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that these manufacturers are compelled to put down on labels that the food you're about to buy, the tomato or whatever, is genetically modified.
They're not yet, because it's such a brand new field. There's a great deal. Even the president, in one of his recent speeches, talked about the need to implement legislation regarding genetic modification of living organisms. And some of the independent tests that have been done, rats that were fed, for instance, genetically modified potatoes and some of these soy products that are Roundup ready, that are being produced by one of the leading genetic laboratories in this country, these rats that ate this product, their offspring died at half-life. So and then people living down air from some of the genetically modified wheat products have shown that they're developing respiratory problems and diseases. And so the thing is, we don't know what some of these things are going to do. And the FDA is allowing the producers of the products to do their own testing. And
companies are also buying up seed companies, Tom. Seed companies that in the past provided seed of natural corn and other types of produce. And now they're being bought up as well. And I also believe that if a farmer, see, in the old days, if a farmer wanted to plant corn every year, he would always hold back some of the corn.
Right.
He'd use it as seed for the next planting season.
Right.
Now you can't do that. You have to buy brand new genetically modified seed every year. And that's become a problem for farmers.
It's a real problem for farmers. These Terminator seeds, they're actually genetically engineered not to produce a seed that will grow a crop. So you buy the first edition. It grows a crop, and if you take any seed from it, it won't produce a crop anyway. It's a Terminator seed. And so they're creating a corporate control of the farming industry. And that, boy, that's just another entire subject altogether.
Oh my God.
So people out there don't understand what we were talking about with the fly. They should get that movie and watch it, because your buddy Jeff Goldblum, Seth Brundle, he's conducting these teleportation experiments when he accidentally has his DNA combined with a common housefly during one of those experiments. And then soon after, he starts becoming really a transhumanist dream. He becomes a superhuman. I mean, lightning quick agility, heightened senses, superhuman power. But then something happens, of course, as it always does in these scary movies, and he starts transforming into a hideous monster. By the way, Jess Goldblum also starred as Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park.
That's right.
And
he's a great actor.
And in that movie, I love him. In that movie, he subscribes to the chaos theory. And in Jurassic Park, remember when the T-Rex is chasing him down the road? And he wants to know who in the world thought it was a good idea to bring all these extinct species back to life. But the point in that film is important to what we're talking about, because his question is, if evolution. Now let's say for a minute that you have no religious or esoteric or anything like that beliefs at all. You just purely believe you're born. It's just a matter of Darwinianism, and when you die, you're gone. Even if you believe that, this Goldblum character is saying, if evolution decided to selectively remove these organisms millions of years ago, maybe there was a reason. And in any case, since they've been gone for so long, what will the impact of them on our current environment be? And those are the many kinds of questions, before you even get into the ethics of all this, these are the many kinds of questions that start happening in a real world scenario when you're talking about what will happen when you change, when you modify living organisms. They certainly are going to impact the environment within which they're captured, and in ways that are unpredictable. You can't possibly know.
Well, that's absolutely true. You scientists now want to bring back the woolly mammoth.
That's right. And they probably will.
And who knows what will happen when that creature comes back.
That's right. We don't know.
Well, that's dangerous. And let's get back to portals for a moment, because, of course, the age-old question has always been, who are the gods? Who is God? In the interpretation of whoever came down, whatever came down, do you believe that there's still a higher power than what visited this planet, whether it was physical or multidimensional?
Well, I do. I mean, here again, I'm a Christian, and so as I'm studying this phenomenon, I can't deny the record of the phenomenon, and so I make it comfortable to my worldview. And so I interpret it based on my understanding of the scriptures and other books, and so I see God there in the book of Genesis creating all of these various tens of thousands of different living specimens, and he gives Adam the responsibility of naming all of these specimens. But it isn't very long before you now have another super intelligence, another multi-dimensional being, and it's at war with God, or has been, and wants to stand in his place, so it comes down to corrupt the creation that was made by God. It wants to receive worship or whatever, and so working from that premise, I would make all of the different interpretations that you and I have talked about and are talking about tonight. Now, one of the things that may set me apart from other Christian believers is that I also perceive that angels, demons, that sort of thing, have physical and scientific ability. In other words, that technology, which is often viewed as only a human trait, is not true. That even the spiders weave their traps.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has creative ability. In fact, Romans 1:20 tells us that the invisible things of God are understood by the things that we can see. And those kind of scriptures lead me to think that angels, whatever you want to think that is, had technology at their disposal before the Genesis creation, and may have developed it to a level so far above human ingenuity as to appear supernatural. And ancient books, archaeology, support, I think, that notion that prehistoric forces, whatever they are, created cities, including extraplanetary ones, and even unconventional weapons. And that in our exploration of space, we may in fact find things that are very reminiscent of Egyptian constructs, and we may find them on other planets that attest back to a time when there was this cosmic war Now, you know, Alan Holt was the guy that first defined the field reconnaissance space-time tunneling. Am I saying that right?
You sure are.
Yeah, back in the 70s, what today is more commonly thought of as wormholes or stargates or whatever. And many people have picked up on that theory that there are these hyperspace tunnels that might connect these remote regions of the universe, these different dimensions or different moments in time even. And that these beings could hypothetically be traveling between these space-time tunnels, either from incredibly far distances to the Earth in matters of seconds, maybe even at speeds greater than the speed of light, or that it's parallel universes, side by side, and that we don't see them any more than a two-dimensional creature could understand what a three-dimensional creature is. If we were to suddenly put our finger down into their reality, it would just appear as a round circle. They wouldn't know what we are because they have no third dimension perception.
Well, Tom, what if their role was these multi-dimensional beings? What if their role was to travel throughout the universe, seeding planets, altering life forms? What if that was their mission?
Well, I mean, that's a theory, panspermia. And there are some members, I think, even of the Catholic Church today that are talking about this whole idea. I remember I read an article not long ago, I think, where Guy Cosmonolgo, you know, his new little booklet that he's got that's published now, and he's talking about the reality of extraterrestrial intelligence. In fact, mm-hmm. That was published by a Catholic-owned publishing house. And it's interesting because if you read it's a small booklet. If you read it, though, he's saying that the chances are greater now than ever before, and they're greater than not that we will soon be in contact with extra-dimensional or super-intelligent other-Earth intelligence, which is an astounding statement, actually, from a Vatican astronomer. I kind of got lost there for a moment. I don't remember what we were even talking about.
Well, we were talking about who are the gods. What are the gods? You know, and was it their mission to seed the entire universe?
Oh, panspermia is what made me think of Guy Cosmonolgo. He's now on a new venture where he is studying what he calls the Jesus seed. And from what I can understand, just from what I've read about his ideas on this, he's actually talking about panspermia. He's talking about that God existed at some point in remote history, and that God created life, and that life has continued to expand throughout the cosmos over, well, who knows, eons, over untold numbers of millions of years. So now, that's not an idea that I'm ready to buy, but it, at least it is something that's being talked about by scholars of religion.
We're coming up to the half here, Tom, but I want to talk with you about the last time you and I chatted. You put up a picture on your webpage of your niece and what looked like a very strange creature caught on her computer camera. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back. Do you believe in ghosts, by the way?
Yeah. You know, think in terms of Mike Kaiser.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, that's a good analogy right there. Websites, what do you got?
RaidersNewsUpdate.com, Ahrimangate, ahriman.com, the Ahrimangate. That's my book, of course. And by the way, I don't know if it was linked at Coast to Coast tonight. I didn't have a chance to check, but I also put up a website with a great deal of films, and also news and government resources, things like that, for people who were listening to this broadcast tonight, that they'd be able to check that to find the legitimate resources for the material we're talking about.
Great.
And I don't know if that was linked or not.
I think he's got it linked. If not, we'll make sure that he's got the one that you just mentioned, but I'm pretty sure it's there. Stay with us. Tom Horn, our guest. We'll be back in a moment. We'll talk about this strange picture that his niece was involved with. We'll be back. We'll take your phone calls next hour with our guest, Tom Horn. I can't resist when he was talking about the movie The Fly, the original one, of course, the classic line from the movie The Fly. Do you remember that? Anybody ever see the black and white version? It was when that little fly with a little human face was there, and somebody came down and swatted him. But right before it happened, and I think he was in a spider's web. Yep, he was in a spider's web with his little high-pitched voice going, "Help me, help me," if you remember that. I couldn't resist. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, you put up on a webpage a picture of your niece that looked like an alien or some kind of creature caught on her computer camera standing behind her. Tell me about that story.
Well, I grew up in this home where an event was occurring that is similar or maybe identical to the classical alien abduction phenomenon situation that was occurring with my sister. And I knew something was going on when I was a small child, but I didn't really understand until years later when I was pastoring and my sister began confiding in me. And I, of course, tried to start, understand, make sense, because I believed her.
Yeah.
Because I knew her, and I knew she wouldn't lie to me, that this event was happening. I couldn't make any sense out of it. And I tried talking with some of the spiritual authorities that I knew. They also weren't really able to help me. So I'm growing up in this home, and then years later, and I'll bypass all of that story, this phenomenon begins happening with my sister's daughter. Now, my niece is a federal employee with the Social Security Division, and she starts having this phenomenon where these beings are visiting her, and she goes to the head psych doctor for the Social Security Division. He tells her that it's real and that the government's aware of it. Well, that really blows her mind. Now she now she's afraid, actually, and calls me and spends a great deal of time talking to me about the experiences that she's having. And then this day comes where she's up in Seattle, Washington. She goes up there to see a football game, and Spielberg's people are there. She didn't know this at the time, but they're there promoting the Taken television series.
Sure.
And they have a big tent set up, and these military, these people that are dressed in military garb come out of the crowd, walk up to her and say, "You've been chosen, come with us." That by itself sounds kind of weird, and why they picked her out of a crowd, not knowing anything about her past, I guess. But she, after she asks them who they are and what they're doing, and they tell her that they're there with Spielberg promoting the Taken television series, and they'll give her a bunch of, gifts and things, promo things, if she'll go with them. So she's there with her husband and a group of other people that were her friends, and they leave the Space Needle and they go over where this tent is set up, and they go inside where these people that are working for Spielberg put her through a series of psychological evaluation. And from a fairly large crowd, they determined that she, along with one other person, are, in their opinion, most likely candidates to have actually been taken, alien abductees.
That's interesting.
And so she comes home, she calls me, I asked her to put in the mail to me all the stuff that they had gave to her, which she did, and she sent it all to me, including this really small, weird-looking little CD that I put in my computer that was able to open gateways online into some private information that Spielberg was using to promote his TV series, but some other information. She also got the opportunity, and we talked about that on the last show, to see Spielberg's private collection of alien implants. But so she comes back from that event, and she's actually kind of jazzed by it. It's kind of a celeb thing. And she's on her computer at home talking to her friends, and she's got a little camera on her computer that'll snap her picture every few seconds, I guess, and and then the person on the other side can see it, and she has a little capture of it too for however many seconds it lasts on her computer. Yeah. And so she's on the computer talking to her friends, and this little camera snapping pictures. Well, all of a sudden this picture shows up down in the right side of her computer monitor, and what looks like your typical reptoid type mix of reptoid or alien gray or whatever it is standing half inside the picture, and it scares her. And so she keeps the capture of that picture, and she sends it to me. And actually, when I got it, it gave me, you know, just cold chills, because it looked very real to me. It didn't look like a trick of light. And so I took the image and sent it over to Steve Quayle, and I asked Steve if he would have it analyzed for me, and he sent it to Stan Deo, who did a very exhaustive analysis of the photo. You know, multi-screens, different lighting, and that sort of thing. And Stan sends it back to me, first of all, saying that, you know, the picture's not a fake. But now saying that it's not a fake doesn't necessarily mean there's actually something there. What is it? And Stan's, you know, hypothesis was that maybe light was reflecting off of something and creating what appeared to be a three-dimensional photo. So I sent Stan's analysis. Stan didn't know that at the time, but I sent Stan's analysis to a friend of mine who works at a specific department in the government, and asked him if he concurred with Stan's analysis, and he sent me back his analysis, in which he said, well, certainly Stan could be right, but he said, ask Stan if he's familiar with a particular science model, and the science model had something to do with multidimensionals. It might have a method for manipulating light photons or something like that for creating holographic three-dimensional forms.
For communication purposes?
Well, I don't know, because I never sent it to Stan. At the time, this is back in 2002, and back then I didn't know Stan that well. And you know, Steve had done this for me as a favor.
Sure.
And so I didn't want to be too, you know, assuming. And so I just simply didn't ask the question. It was enough for me to know that Stan had determined that the photo was not a fake, that whatever was there was that the photo was real. And now interpreting the photo might mean something else, but the photo was real. Now, when I was on Coast to Coast back in May talking with you, and we put up that page where the picture was there, we got, I don't know, several thousand visits to that site, and but among the people that went there, you know, there was, and I'm actually glad for this. There are people that listen to Coast, and these guys want to bust anything that isn't real, and that's what I was looking for. I wanted to know if it was real,
right?
And I didn't get any criticisms of the photo at all, and I got quite a few people who analyzed the photo whose credentials I'm not sure of. But I got at least two people who analyzed the photos whose credentials came across to me as being at least equivalent to Stan's. And they determined that not only was the photo real, but there was actually a three-dimensional presence there. And one of the guys who did an exhaustive analysis of the photo actually determined that he actually made out the fingers on the hand of the whatever it was that was standing behind her. And also determined that there was the reflection of the computer screen that could be picked up in its eye. And so, in his opinion, this was not a trick of light. It was actually something that was there. Now, you know, what it was, who knows? But given the history, of my sister and her daughter, and now I may be suspect also of her daughter, that just something there was very unusual.
Do a lot of things happen to them?
You know, and I think this goes to the fact that this is a true experience. Neither one of them are really all that interested in talking about it. I've talked more about it than they have. They don't. My sister won't talk about it at all. But I grew up in this family. I knew it was happening, so I knew something was happening. And it followed some, it followed some both discovery and probably involvement on the part of my dad in some certain things. And I think I told you the story where we woke up in the middle of the night with my sister screaming, and my mother went in there and, you know, put a Bible under her pillow and prayed with her all night. But I didn't find out until years later that she had woke up in the middle of the night with these small bulbous-headed gray men standing around her bed. And it wasn't until years later as a pastor that in counseling her, but also seeing that this story seemed to be identical to what other people around the world were reporting was happening to them. And I came to believe that the phenomenon was real, whatever it was, it's real, and that it goes back to the beginning of time, that something has been visiting the earth and involving itself with the human species since the beginning of time.
Sounds like they have the ability, Tom, to alter wormholes or portals and put them any place they want.
Well, you know, think about some of the stuff that's been written by some of the best researchers into ufology, where Mack talks about alien beings that appear to come to us from the sky in strange spacecraft, but that they present this, and he's repeating the story that's told to him, in some cases by uneducated people, talking about how they seem to partake of properties that belong to both the spirit and the material world. And Jacques Vallée talked about that in Passport to Magonia. And then, I don't know, but the fact is that there are properties here that have been interpreted by religious scholars from the beginning of time as being equivalent to whatever angelology and demonology is in various people's faith. And you know, I can tell already, with it being 10 to 1 and o'clock in the morning by my time, then we're gonna run out of time, and we're not gonna have time to talk.
I know it's gonna be the same thing that happened to us last time, where we have to. This is almost like part two of our last discussion.
I know.
Hey, you've got to tell me about this gargoyle thing. What was this?
Well, I put it up on that site that I sent to Lex, and if it's up, people can go there and listen to it. It just happened. This 3 or 4 days ago, my niece, the same niece I was talking about a moment ago with this picture, she sent me an email and said that she came home, checked her phone messages, and one of the phone messages is very strange in that somebody called her and they're talking, but over the top of this, there is this inlaid voice that's very strange. It almost sounds like it's talking in a different language. But as I'm listening to it, it sounds to me like somebody's talking specifically about her, and they're talking about the need to call her in order to accomplish a certain thing. But then the things that they say after that, I can't make it out. But it's a very spooky sounding recording. In fact, I had my son, who owns a studio, I had him just record off the micro cassette she sent me, the MP3, and I uploaded it to that page for Coast to Coast so that people could go there and listen to it. And if it's not, by the way, if it's not linked at Coast to Coast, I think the website name is RaidersNewsUpdate.com/ and then CoastAM.htm.
I think he's got the link, Tom, but I think we're slamming that website, so it may take people a little longer to get in, but patience, everyone.
Okay, well, but if they go there, and I would love, you know, I'd love for some more of these guys that listen to Coast that are experts in some of these areas in terms of analyzing audio.
Being a skeptic doesn't bother you, does it?
No way. I'd rather prove something is either just a natural phenomenon that appeared to be beyond normal, And we show that there really wasn't anything there to start with. It's just a natural phenomenon that we didn't understand what we were listening to. But then, like in the case of this photograph this last time around, I'm still standing out there with question marks around it, because for the life of me, it appears to me something's actually there. It could actually be one of the first photographic proofs in history of a multidimensional being that appeared in a split frame, in a split second of time. It gives me the creeps just looking at it.
Wouldn't that be incredible if you were able to capture that?
Well, it's what it looks like, and I'm certainly willing for anybody to tell me that that's not the case. But when you look at this family and this mother and then her daughter and all this stuff that was happening privately, has always been in the closet. None of these people, by the way, they don't want to be profiled. They don't want any exposure. They don't want to be talked to. They don't want to be bothered about it. These are not people that are seeking any kind of publicity or fame.
Or finances. Exactly.
Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. They want no publicity. They'd probably be upset if they knew I was even talking about it. But for me, it's my family, and I'm on a quest to try to make sense out of some of these things that I know are real, and so to interpret what they are and to understand them. You know, if it's demonological, then I know how to handle that. But my buddy Mike Heiser has helped me to understand that not everything is demonological. There could be something entirely different here that's outside of the redemption process. I call it Heiser's lion, by the way. But he's a PhD, and he's helped me to understand that there could be phenomenon here that's operating that's beyond the cookie cutter approach to theology, philosophy, history, any of those things. So
I would love for you to get an audience with Stephen Hawking, Tom.
Well, you know, and talking about transhumanism and transgenics, Hawking's been asking, you know, what are we going to do to save ourselves?
Yeah, he really is, and he's getting more and more involved in that.
And his last response is, I don't know. But yeah, I'll tell you, even before I started writing my book, The Armand Gate, my research was taking me to the door of these people who are at the forefront of futuristic technology, especially, of course, with regard to how, you know, biotechnology might change the human species. And what does that mean? Are we opening gateways? Are we opening portals? Are we going to step through a doorway into an area of both intelligence and experience that's going to shock us, that we're not ready for? When my book first came out, The Armand Gate, I was doing sometimes as much as 8 hours a day of radio shows. And pretty soon, even some of the guys who were on the transhumanist side were contacting me. And I got to tell you something you might find interesting, that both I and the transhumanists agree that we're living on the imminent edge of post-humanity. I can almost guarantee you that this is the last generation of humans as we know them, as the sole higher intelligent occupiers of planet Earth.
Would you say we're in end times then?
I definitely say that we're in the end times, but don't forget that a day with the Lord is 1,000 years.
Oh,
and 1,000 years
too.
Of time is not relevant to God in the same way that it's relevant to us. But when I was on, I was on with Dr. James Hughes, you know him?
James, yes.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago on his Jane Scherfer radio program. And, you know, there he is, the executive director of his Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. He's a bioethicist. He's a sociologist. He's an author. He teaches at Trinity College in Hartford. He sits on a board at Yale University. And him and I come from diametrically different world views and disciplines, and yet we both agree that mankind is standing now on the cusp of a radical future, where the integration of changes to humans are going to mean that humanity is going to be something different in a very short period of time.
All right, Tom, we're going to be back with phone calls now. Now it's your time. to make the call.